Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
There he is, Mr. Always on Mute.
And now, back to the show.
I was hoping that you would actually go back to the old way of recording with your phone, so that way if people thought this was legitimately a part two, they'd be like hyper confused. Like, what is Steve sounded so good. Now he sounds like shit. What the fuck?
Well, you would have needed to give me the heads up on that one.
I didn't think about that until like 2 seconds ago.
Fair enough.
When you said that you were going to be on your computer. For anybody who, I guess it's everybody. I did not actually record two parts of a podcast. I actually did not record the second part of the podcast. I'm recording right now, which is good. But
did you hear the recording thing?
It says it up in the corner. It says recording. So,
oh, okay, good.
Yes. I knew, and I said that like two podcasts ago. I go, so I'm going to forget to fucking do this one time, and it's going to bite me in the butt. And sure enough, it did.
Indeed, it did.
Yes. So, all apologies on that one, people. That was a Joe mistake. That was a Joe mistake.
Technological errors.
Yeah. We didn't really talk about too much in the last cast, in that second half. That was of super importance. The only thing was that we did talk a little bit about the Army Painter contrasts.
Oh yes, the speed paints.
Yes, and the reactivation. And Steve actually did do a live demonstration on podcast. It's not the best way of showing a live demonstration, but he did, and there was a little bit of reactivation.
Yes, yeah. So if you're using it, just make sure you seal it. That's basically all you need to do. I've been messing with it a lot more actually, and I think if you're my final. My final opinion on it is if you are using it as a final bit, so either like as a glaze on top or as like, I am going to do this and then the model is done, I think the speed paint is actually superior to contrast. Now, if you are using it as, I'm skipping my base coat and shade to apply this and I'm going to paint over it, contrast is far better.
I mean, that sounds about accurate. I wouldn't dispute that. I've said this before, I just do not like Army Painter paints. I feel like they are the Kmart brand of Army paint of miniature painting. Not that that's too bad. I did enjoy Kmart as a child, but I think that's because they had very narrow aisles and it made me feel bigger.
Well, having used it now, I feel that it's just a different product. I don't know. It's weird. It's not a replacement for contrast. It's actually just something different. I found that because I did a one-to-one test for, I did a Zenithial Prime, and then I dry brushed a bunch of gradual brightness of white to two minis. And then I just did straight like, I'm going to just put contrast over this, and then I'm going to put speed paint over this, and the way the speed paint dries just looks so much better. If you're just going to leave it, like if you're not going to do any painting over it, it just looks so much better with the speed paint.
Yeah.
But with the contrast, like, I mean, if you're going to paint over it, there's no question. You just want to use contrast. So that's my final verdict on the two things. So I do not believe that either is a replacement for one another. So there you go. That's my final call on it.
And there, I'll listen to Steve because I'm never buying Army Painter paints unless absolutely fucking necessary for like a very, very specific paint color.
It was actually kind of funny when Rob Hawkins mentioned P3. I was like, I do remember really liking P3 paints.
P3 actually had some really fucking good colors.
Yeah, they had that was the thing. They had very specific colors that were only P3.
Yeah, except and P3 suffers because, oh, we're gonna talk about Privateer and just
we sure are.
Yeah, that was a good transition, Steve. I if you were trying to make a good radio transition, I'm sorry that I pointed it out and made it very blatantly obvious, therefore ruining your transition.
That's okay.
P3, their biggest sin was the pots.
Like, yeah.
The problem with the P3 pots is they are very reminiscent of the old school GW pots, which you actually sent me that eBay link
I did. I hope you got it.
I did not. I didn't even. I didn't bid on that. No, I'm not. That's no. But the because I was never that was those weren't my pots. I never painted with those pots.
Oh, you did the old twisty ones that you needed the wrench to get open after a while.
Yeah, I had the twisty pot ones. Those were my first ones that I was using. But it was the top because the problem was that when you had to peel that top open and the pot was relatively full, there was about a 30% chance of splashback.
Yes.
Like you would definitely get shit all over the place if you weren't careful when you were opening those.
Yes.
And like most pot paints, you have a congealing issue on the pot top.
Yes. So yeah, on the rim and stuff too.
Yeah. And you know, it's just, and they suffered because Privateer just kind of, I don't want to say they shat the bed because they haven't shat the bed yet. They just kind of like farted a little too hard and a little bit of poop came out.
A percentage of shart.
Yeah. It was a little bit of a shart, but not just a little bit. It was like one of those ones where they're just sitting watching TV and maybe they had a little Chipotle. And they were just like laughing a little too hard at the latest episode of
the Big Bang Theory.
And it just a little poop came out when they farted. That's my analogy of what happened with Privateer Press.
Okay.
But the problem was that happened on a date. They were having a stay at home date.
Yes.
And they sharted a little bit, which is not good for your date. You know,
it's ruinous.
It could be if you don't handle it properly, it could be ruinous.
Yeah.
So let's get into it. Privateer Press just announced a fourth edition of War Machine. They didn't say Hordes. I think they just said War Machine.
They actually did mention that. I read the whole article and I also read the follow up article.
Oh my God, you did research?
I did. There is no longer a distinction between War Machine and Hordes. The game is now just called War Machine.
Oh, okay, cool.
So Hordes, though,
which is what I always said to begin with. I always said it was a one game. So
yeah, it was always weird. It was always weird to have the two brands anyway. Like that was just a weird thing that existed for a long time, for kind of like, for I don't know, posterity, I guess.
Yeah.
But they now just refer to them as Focus Warcasters or Fury Warcasters.
Oh, okay.
So your former Hordes Warcasters would be referred to as Fury Warcasters. So that's one of the big changes. The other really big change, the one that's actually, you know, the strongest change, is they're breaking the game into formats. The game is now going to be two formats. There is going to be I don't know. I just always use the magic terms because it's just easier.
Yes.
There's going to be standard, which is your, like, you know, your in-print stuff. This is like the, you know, the most played format, the intention of the most played format. Those are going to be standard. And what that's going to be is that's going to be all of the new models they make and a very curated list of their old models.
Okay.
Then there's going to be the legacy format, which is do whatever the fuck you want. Use all the old models, you know, use the new ones. You can use the new ones too.
Yeah. Which is what I always said, like, GW needs to do with 40K because there is too much shit in 40K right now. And they need to crop probably 60% of it.
Yeah. I mean, the SKU bloat of 40K is nothing compared to Privateer.
Yeah. Privateer has a huge SKU bloat.
Yeah, the SKU issues of Privateer were very, very real. And I think that this is a smart change. I don't think they're going to piss off anyone really, like, because you know, they didn't.
Is there anyone left?
Yes, exactly. That's the rub, isn't it?
Well, what they have to do is they have to intrigue enough old players to go to their PP shelf and go.
Blow the dust off and see if there's anywhere, if anything.
Try it out at their friendly local gaming store and see how it plays out. And if they like it, they could be like, maybe I will play a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, it's not enough to get me like interested in War Machine or Hordes again. Like I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, I'm going to jump right onto that. But I mean, if I still had War Machine and Hordes minis, maybe. Yeah. Like, I might be like, oh, you know, maybe I'll give it a shot with the models that I already own.
Yeah, because they have an uphill battle, because what they have to do is, it's a multi-step process for reinvigorating that game. Yeah. One, you have to reach out to all your previous players, right? People who did enjoy playing War Machine and Hordes and still have models.
Yes.
They have to get them in gaming stores to play that game. So that way people who don't have models will go, I would like to buy some models and play this game.
Like, yes.
That's the way to really do it. And it's an uphill battle.
Now there is some other news about their models, which I was very interested about. Their models are now being shifted to 3D printing.
Yes, I saw that.
They're selling 3D printed models. That's their new business idea. Like, we are going to sell our 3D prints, and that's how they're shifting to it. So they're gonna keep the supplies.
They're not selling the files. They're selling models.
They're selling actual models that they are 3D printing themselves.
Yeah, because but that's the thing though, is here's the secret. Most mini manufacturers print out 3D models.
Yeah, I mean, other than Workshop and like Mantic.
Not Mantic. I know that, because Mantic is a lot of old school sculpting, but GW 3D prints all of their designs and then casts the 3D prints.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, they still make sprues though. Like, they make plastic sprues.
Yeah.
Which are not 3D printed. But these are going to be like a box with a 3D printed model inside. That's their idea. And like the idea behind it, or one of the design intentions, which was smart, is that they get to free themselves from any of the recent logistics issues in terms of like international shipping.
Yeah.
Because they're just going to make the models in Texas and ship them directly from Texas. So there's no waiting for containers. There's no dealing with like random port fees or port delays, which have been, you know, one of the absolute nightmares about, you know, so with someone who deals with international shipping all the time. Yeah, shit sucks, man. It's awful. It is terrible.
It sucks, yo.
Yeah, it's really bad, and there's no sign of it letting up anytime soon. I mean, hell, the Kickstarter for Darkest Dungeon board game had to go back to the well and be like, hey, you have to pay us $20 more or we're not shipping you your game. Because the shipping costs by the time the game was ready to ship just exploded. And they were like, yeah, you have to pay more if you want this game, and we're not taking refunds. So either pay us $20 more and get your game, or don't pay us $20 more and we're keeping your money. Obviously, yeah. Like me, like, pay the fucking $20. Like, they're not extorting you. This is the way it is. Like, just pay the $20 and get your game. Like, you're still getting a great price. But anyway, that aside, so that's a big change. The other big change is,
thanks, Obama.
Yes, let's blame Obama. That's a good one. I'm gonna blame Richard Nixon.
It's true, because as they say in Star Trek VI, only Nixon could go to China.
So
old earth proverb,
only Nixon go to China.
Only Nixon could go to China.
Shaka when the walls fell. So the other big thing is that the Warjacks are being designed a little differently.
I did see some of the new designs. They look sexy. Yeah,
they look cool. They're also going to have magnets. Every Warjack doesn't come with magnets, because the idea now is that the design intention is that you're going to be able to, you're still going to play a 2 out of 3. That's the idea. And they're going to let you swap your Warjack's gear in between rounds.
Oh.
So like if we play a match and you, like, I don't know, you have like a really fast moving army, and like you beat the crap out of my Warjacks because I took a bunch of long range Warjacks, and you got close super fast and like just killed the shit out of me because I brought a long range army and your army super fast. I can be like, well, I'm going to swap them to their melee option. So now for game two, I'm going to be able to punch you if you try to get near me. So that kind of thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. I like that.
But then couldn't your opponent then switches to a long range army and a close army?
Yes, that is also true. So it adds a bit more strategery to the game.
Yeah,
strategery. Yeah. So like, I mean, it sounds cool. I know one of the biggest issues. Oh, and the rules. The game is going fully digital for rules. There's no cards. It is like you are going to be like their app was kind of like quasi abandonware for a very long time, and they're just basically like, nope, this is like the game is now going to operate with the app. Like that it is very much going to be like use the app, because there's gonna be, you know, any rule changes or model changes that'll happen will just be on the app, so they're gonna be able to do balancing a lot faster. Because like one of the many third edition related blunders was the Scorn. The third edition Scorn, from what I understand, their launch, they were not functional.
Yeah.
They like were literally not functional. Like the cards referenced rules that didn't exist, and like things didn't work like mechanically. Like they released a non-functional army. So essentially they shipped and printed this army, or they printed all of these cards that were literally garbage. Like you had to just throw them away because they were not functional. So like they're going to avoid any scenarios like that, because if there is some sort of huge disaster like that again, they'll just be like, okay, well, we're just going to fix that real quick in the app and we'll call it a day.
Oh, cool.
So that's good.
That's good.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, like I said, I mean, I'm interested to see where this leads. Like I'm not gonna like jump on and be like, hey, I'm gonna play War Machine right away, but I'm interested to see what happens. Because I mean, you gotta figure before, you know, with each edition prior to this one, War Machine had let's say like position, like they were in stores, like there was I can't think of a single store that I know of that carries War Machine anymore, like that even has it on their shelf to buy for anyone.
A couple of our stores out here have them. I mean, they might be not old as, stock, but they're not as, like restocking.
Not as far as I know, every store is discontinued carrying the line, and anything they do have is just stuff that's like they haven't sold at discount.
I was going to say, that was also always the problem with Privateer Press, is that their models would be at a massive discount.
Yeah, their online, the online sellers were also a huge problem.
Yeah.
So and that was a legit issue as well.
So anyway, that's crazy actual news that we have. Glad we didn't actually have a two-parter so that we could actually address it.
we covered actual news essentially as it was breaking.
You know, actual news too. The day that this podcast is going to drop, which is tomorrow, the Dungeons and Dragons new starter set drops in Target.
Oh, the TV show one.
The TV show one, and I for one will be going and picking it up.
All right, well, enjoy it. You've got to be acrobat.
Yeah, from what I hear though, the first edition starter set was massively discounted at Target, like massively discounted.
Oh yeah,
talking like $10.
Ooh,
they were like on clearance, and I know a bunch of people picked them up.
Yeah,
know why, but they did.
Save them, you know? You were talking about your mad plan, your mad cap scheme.
For anybody who is uninitiated to Game Classy and my dragon horde of stuff, I have a very large Dungeons and Dragons collection. I mostly collect 2E stuff. But if I find 1E, I also will grab that. Original Dungeons and Dragons, not Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. I collect all of that stuff.
Dungeons and Dragons, and it was advanced.
And I started collecting 5th edition books because I've seen them popping up more at used bookstores. So if I see one for a decent enough discounted price, I'm going to pick it up. Usually it's around $20 to $25, which is half price. So I've been picking them up because I know 5.5 is getting dropped soon. And I was talking to some people who are, let's just say, connected to the game. And they're saying that more than likely Wizards is dropping it as 5.5. They're too afraid of dropping it as a 6th edition, calling it 6.
Yeah.
Not too afraid, but they just know from a marketing standpoint, 5.5 is going to sound better than 6th.
Right.
But people are dropping their 5th edition books in anticipation of the new thing, which is dumb because there's been nothing. We don't even know when that's getting released.
Right. Exactly. There's been no announcements. I mean, if there is any announcement, it is highly likely to come at the thing that's happening, what, next month? Gen Con?
Yeah.
Jornicorn?
Yeah, Jornicorn. And but the thing, but no, but Wizards doesn't even go to Gen Con. They're not even going to Gen Con. They never do anything at Gen Con anymore.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, when fifth edition got released, they weren't even at Gen Con that year. And I think only one booth, our local gamers gaming store, had the booth there that was the only one selling fifth edition books. And they made bank. But yeah, Wizards doesn't go because Wizards is part of Hasbro and Hasbro has nothing to do with gamers. They're like, we make all of our money off G.I. Joe.
Give us your money and shut up. Actually, no, they make almost all their money off Magic the Gathering.
I know.
That their quarters are almost all of their good years have been buoyed by Magic. Their toy line stuff is
I was talking with my daughter that at one point Marvel Comics was owned by Toy Biz. Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember that.
You don't remember that? It was like, I think in the late 90s, they got in some real bad money trouble.
Oh, that was when they were like, when there was like the question of if Marvel Comics was going to continue to exist, right?
Yeah. And so they had real bad money problems. That's when they were licensing all their characters for next to nothing.
Yes, for movies. Yes.
And they end up getting bought by Toy Biz. And then, like, I think it was Toy Biz got bought by Hasbro, maybe.
Yeah.
And then it was like, sense. So they got saved for that one. And they started doing a little bit better on the comics. They got a new editor in there and they were making a little bit more money for the IP. And then they got bought by Disney, of course. And what was it 2010, 2011, something around there? So.
Das House of Mouse.
Das House of Mouse. So yeah, they have the I was just talking about that. It was funny. So anyway, yes, the Privateer Press stuff looks interesting. D&D. So I've been collecting the D&D stuff. I was trying to figure out my train of thought and where I was going with that one. Got caught up. So the fifth edition stuff I've been buying up because I know as soon as 5.5 hits, there's going to be people dumping their fifth ed books and then buying a new 5.5. And there's going to be about a 6-month period where people are going to make a decision on whether or not they're going to go to 5.5 or they're going to stay with fifth. More than likely, if the YouTube channels that they watch.
Oh, they're going to 5.5.
Everyone's going to 5.5. Then the people are going to go to 5.5 because they are just the drones that are like, yes.
Well, I mean, also 5.5 is going to be a transition of buy the new player's handbook, new dungeon master's guide, and new monster manual. Like, there's really, like, everything else will just, you know, all of the other books you own are still, you know, fine. So, with that being the trend, like, with the idea being a 5.5 transition instead of a 6th, I think you're going to have basically everyone. And of course, you know, the social media push, because they're definitely going to have, like, you know, Critical Role and Matt Mercer and all those.
Oh, yeah.
They're absolutely going to, push the edition as well. So
whatever they're getting paid to push, they'll push.
Yeah. So I have no doubts that, like, the edition will be the 5.5 will be a huge success.
In
that regard.
Well, yes, all the books are going to be fine, but
I want to get this out so I don't forget. One of the things that's awesome about Spelljammer, the thing coming out, is that
Spelljammer.
So in addition to the content being sweet, but one of the things that's really, really cool about the upcoming release is that it's actually a box set.
It's a slipcover.
Of three mini hardcovers.
Yeah.
And I really, 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 really hope it does super, super well, like as well as I expect it's going to do, which I think it's going to be a smash hit. I think it's going to be the biggest D&D release. I think it's going to end up being the biggest D&D selling item outside of, you know, the original three books, the player's handbook, et cetera. You know, you can't outsell the core books, but I think it's going to be the supplement. And I hope that they haven't come up with an idea yet on how they're going to do the launch. And I really hope they launch 5.5 as a slipcase three book set, just like Spelljammer.
Well, they did recently. I don't know if you paid attention to it, but they did release 2 3 book slip covers. They did the Players, Monsters, and Dungeon Master. Then they also, I want to say it was Tasha's Cauldron of Everything, Xanathar's Guide to Everything.
Yes. Sorry,
Morning Canes. Yeah.
I mean the mini size, because the Spelljammer box set is $60, so it's $10 more than your normal hardcover price, which is $50. But you get three mini hardcovers, and it's like that's the whole, like, the game system is inside the three mini hardcovers. So I'm hoping that 5.5 is also $60 for the three mini hardcovers. I guess I should have clarified that. They'll definitely, I mean, if they release them as three full-size hardcovers, they're absolutely going to do the limited edition slipcase, probably alternate covers. No question on that. I was hoping they did like a mini one like they did for Spelljammer.
Well, I think it's interesting because if you actually look at like the, well, you probably have, but the D&D distribution side of it, they actually call it a boxed set.
Yes.
It's not like a slipcase, which it, yes. It's because it's not technically a box set. I don't call that a box set if it's a slipcase.
Yes.
But the, you know, so it's like right. And I find it interesting that right before 5.5, they're releasing Spelljammer, which is, you know, an old air, you know, an old realm. And they're also doing Dragonlance in December. So that's, I think it's interesting that they release those two. And, because they've done Eberron, right? I think Eberron was released.
Yeah, Eberron Rising of the Last War. They have that.
Yeah, Eberron was released. They did Ravenloft. They did doing Spelljammer and Dragonlance. They did not do anything with Elkadim, which might be a little racist in this day and age, so maybe they won't do anything with Elkadim.
I mean, it doesn't have to be racist.
I mean, anytime you're doing like fantasy Middle East like that, it tends to skew racist.
I mean, I suppose. I mean, you could just hire literally one Middle Eastern person to help you and be like, "Yo, bro, is this racist?" Yeah, that's generally
it always works in getting a token person to decide whether or not something is racist.
I was being facetious about literally one.
I know.
But generally, if you want to avoid any sort of like racial bungling, you just, you know, ask the people.
Yeah,
and I'll be like, yeah, no, that's really bad. Just like, you know, just like we've always joked before, like with George Lucas on the Phantom Menace, he's like,
yeah, I need you to deliver the line like this. Is that regal?
Like this?
Is that regal? Yeah, that's perfect.
George, this is kind of no one was there to tell George Lucas this is massively racist.
Yeah, there just needed to be one person to go, George.
Yeah,
it was 1999. It's a different time. It was that brief, heady period between the fall of communism and 9/11. So. Oh, the 90s. What a vapid and horrible decade. But dig into some sweet action movies.
I mean, what movie or what decade wasn't vapid and horrible?
No, there, you're right. One. They're all horrible decades. All horrible, yes. People grew out of those horrible decades.
Yes.
Let's just face it. The world has been going down since year zero.
Yeah, I'll say the world's been going down since it started.
Yeah. Well, not really. I mean, I think it was 476, the fall of Rome. Oh, wait, that makes me a racist now. God damn it.
Well, hey, we get to live through the fall of Rome again, except we're Rome.
Oh, man. And we only live for 200 years.
Yeah,
225,
man.
240, well,
they do,
250.
They do say everything is going faster now. That's the cycles are all faster.
Well, yeah, maybe. Who knows? I blame the internet.
Sure. I mean, that's fine.
So anyway, if you do want to start collecting D&D stuff, I really highly recommend starting with 5th ed stuff. You could find it fairly cheap. And I've not come across anything that's been incredibly rare, because all those books are very well printed and highly printed. I think the only few that have been like weird, that have been a little difficult to find, just to let you know, are the supplemental rule books have been relatively difficult outside of the Player's Handbook, Monster Manual, Dungeon Master's Guide. So like Volo, Xanathar's, Mordenkainen's, Tasha's, and Fizban's have all been relatively harder to find. And the adventures have been a little more difficult they show up a little bit less than the other stuff, but they show up more than the actual supplemental rule books.
Right.
Yeah. So just to keep that in mind, that's my mad plan, is I'm going to collect the 5th edition stuff. And tomorrow or today, as this podcast drops, I'm going to Target and I'm buying the new starter set, because I want to do that campaign.
So you can be Acrobat.
Acrobat. I wish they were putting that in there. I still say the two things that they need to add to 5th edition, they need to add Acrobat and Cavalier. I think that was the other one, right? It was Cavalier.
Yeah, it was Cavalier, because they couldn't make him a paladin because he was the token character who gets shouted down by the group.
And what was Acrobat supposed to be? I believe
Acrobat was the stand-in for the thief.
Oh,
because they didn't want it. Because they didn't want. I mean, Acrobat was an actual class that existed, but I believe they used Acrobat instead because they didn't want to have, you know, a kid be a class named thief.
A class named thief. Could very well be. And
yeah,
you know,
so
the,
that's my guess. But yeah, I know for a fact they used Cavalier instead of Paladin because he was the token character. Because I mean, in all those old cartoon shows, there was always a token character whose job was to suggest bad ideas or dissenting ideas and then lose to the majority opinion of the group.
Yeah. It was like cowardly.
Yeah. That was like the absolutely that, what was it in Conan? It was his little fucking weird Phoenix thing. That character.
That ate pomegranates.
Yes. That ate pomegranates.
Yes. So the two things that need to happen in fifth edition, I believe fully, is that classes need to have more of a tree design. You need to be able to, I think building your character past first level needs to be spelled out a little clearer. In all honesty, I think that the Fantasy Flight Star Wars game, or whoever's running the Star Wars RPG now, it's not Fantasy Flight anymore, that system for building your character was so fucking easy. It is so easy, and I think D&D needs a little bit more of that. I think the way that they have it is not as clear. And I think that they could do that to and better show like, oh, so you want to be a acrobat. Here is the route that you would take to be an acrobat. You could deviate from this route and do whatever you want, but this will give you a fairly good acrobat sort of thing.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. The other thing that they need. So I think character building needs to be a little bit smoother. And this is aside from like nitty gritty rule stuff. The other thing is I think that there needs to be more balance between DM and player, because I think right now the game is way player heavy. It makes it very difficult to actually have any sort of like danger or perceived danger. And I think that there needs to
player characters are just so OP.
Well, they're not so OP. It's just that the rules skew so much towards them that there's no chance of them dying.
Yeah, that's it, because they're OP.
Like what there needs to do, I think
tons of hit points. It's hard to not even to frame it in like a, you know, like a her adversarial, like I'm going to kill the player's way. But like it's specifically very difficult to just design content for that game to run, because you've got people who are like I said, I think they're OP. I think they're super strong. So my biggest flaw or my biggest issue is that when I was trying to make my own homebrew stuff, because I mean, I very, very rarely use official supplements. So I'm trying to make my own homebrew stuff, and I found towing the line of making something that's a challenge or a joke was just like nearly impossible. Because like if I brought something and I was like, okay, this should be super hard for them. Like it would be like it, the only way it would be hard is if it would just kill them.
Yeah. No, like, that's you're right.
I couldn't strike any balance, because it's like, yeah, this looks hard. Okay, yeah, it just killed them. And it's like, okay, cool. Like it's just it's either too strong or just too weak every time.
Yeah, I think that I think what would help is that early game, like when you're lower levels, skew more towards the players. Like they should be a little bit better in their early, so they could build up and they could learn the game and play from there. So you want people like GW demo game approach, fast and force, right? Just right. Make it so that the players do really well early in the game. Like those first few, you know, that first few levels, like level 1 through 4, the player should not have that much danger in dying, right? Maybe a little bit, but not too much. But after you get to level 4, and you've kind of established yourself as a player, then it becomes difficult. Then you're going to have a chance. You have a real chance of dying with your character. So I think from a writing standpoint, you know, from a writer standpoint, at that point, you've become connected to your player, to your character. You love your character and you don't want your character to die. Right.
Right.
So therefore, when the issue that you could die comes up, then it becomes much more of a challenge for players. Because if you die, your chance of dying is way too early in a game, a la Traveler, Battletech,
You know, classic, all those classic D&D as well.
Yeah, classic D&D. No, I'm talking like where you could die in the player creation.
Oh yeah, before you even get to start playing. Yes, playing. This is true. Right.
Or early D&D where you could die very early, very fast.
Yeah, you could die the first. You don't. Encounter. Like, a goblin's short sword does D6 damage, and you have 3 hit points. Like,
yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is like you have that. There's no possibility of getting connected to your character because your character could die. So right. Why even bother? So create the connection with your character, then have the chance of dying in the much later. And I think that there should be a thing in D&D where it says, like, what's the max character level? 15 now?
No, it's still 20 plus.
It's still 20 plus.
Yeah.
There should be a thing at the end of the player creation that it's like level 20. Okay, congratulations. You've beat Dungeons and Dragons. Pick a new character.
Yeah, this character goes on one last adventure, then is retired.
It is retired. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like at the end of your next session, you are done. So you get your chance to, you know, fulfill any of your needs that you need to do right there.
Yeah. Well, I'd say one more adventure. Like the final, like, you know, you do your closing adventure is a good one. Yeah,
exactly. You get one more adventure. That would be really good.
The biggest design system that I really like to give you a connection to your character instantly, but also not be crazy like power scaling wise, is actually the Dungeon Crawl Classics system.
Oh, Dungeon Crawl Classics. It was just, yes, Dungeon Crawl Classics Day.
Dungeon Crawl Classics system, if for anyone unfamiliar with it. So Dungeon Crawl Classics is not exactly D&D. It's kind of D&D. It actually uses lots of different sizes of dice for its rolls, up to a D30 even. But the way it does its character generation, they call it a character funnel. And what the way it works is you generate a ton of characters. Like as a player, you generate, I don't know, 10 characters or something. It is a significant amount of characters. They actually produce these great little, they're like scratch off lotto tickets but they're character sheets.
I've seen those. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're ideal for the character funnel because the way the stats work in the character funnel for most cases is you don't know your stat until you try it. So you're like, I'm going to punch it. And you're just like, all right, roll this to see what your fucking punching score is. Then that guy's punching score is whatever. So the idea is that the funnel is going to kill nearly all of your characters. Like almost every single one of your characters is going to die in the funnel because it's like the first dungeon. And you basically, it's you adventuring with a bunch of people at level 0 into a dungeon or scenario.
Scenario. I'm gonna pause you just for a second. We're gonna restart the podcast, keep recording. We're gonna double check that when we start, and then we'll go from there, okay?
All right, let's go.
All right, so the recording is in progress.
All right, very good. So, yes, I heard the recording in progress. And so the idea of this funnel is at the end of it, you have one character left who survived this like deadly fucking dungeon. And now you're like, hey, I'm very connected to, this is now Alphonse, my former humble farmer who has survived this death trap dungeon and is now a fighting man.
Exactly. A fighting man.
Well,
he's a fighting man.
Yeah. You remember that's the old class.
I thought it was just fighter. But...
No. Fighting man.
Was it fighting man?
Fighting man. That's the ancient class. It's a fighting man.
The ancient class
of fighting men.
I like it. I want it. I feel like I was talking with a friend who runs D&D campaigns for 5th edition. He really loves 5th edition, which I kind of snicker at, but he's a writer. And as a writer, I think he has an idea of how the story should go to really pull the players in.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that when the player has no concept of death, murder hobo becomes default.
Right. The biggest issue with D&D in general is that just the way people play D&D, like what they want out of D&D, like how, or I shouldn't say the way, yeah, how people actually
people will want what I D&D. Tell them to want. Anyway.
No. Just this is how they do it. This is what they're actually doing. It's just D&D is just a bad system for what people do with D&D. Like the podcast content creators, like all of the shit they're doing, every single one of those guys, like none of these people should be playing D&D. Like it's just not a good
I agree with you.
It's not a good system for the way these people interact with games. Like, I mean, right off the bat, I'll tell you Fate would be better. Like Fate would be immediately better.
Yeah, Fate would be good.
Because they want heavy story based games, and if you're making a heavy story based game, why are you bothering with Dungeons and Dragons rule set? The Dungeons and Dragons rule set is designed entirely to be you are adventuring. That is what you do. Period. But like they want to have lots of, you know, like social intrigue and like lots of, you know, essentially lots of dialogue, I guess I would say. And like the D&D stuff just doesn't have that. Like you have intimidate and you have like subterfuge. I think you have two social skills for in the game. So yeah. Like, well, you know, and of course the D&D system uses a binary pass fail, you know, like your role, you know, did you succeed or did you fail? Like there's no gradients of success. And like, yes, obviously you can put a gradient of success in, but
many people do,
but by the time you've finished all of your house rules, why are you playing D&D? Like you've added so many house rules to the game, it's not even the game anymore. Why don't you just choose a system that suits your desired game style instead?
Yeah,
that's my big thing about it.
Yeah,
I don't get it.
No, I know why I 100% know why.
I mean, it's the 40K reason.
Yeah, it's that no one's going to sign up to play, or no one's going to watch online a Fate live play because they're like, what the fuck is Fate?
Yes.
What's Numenera? Why should I play Numenera?
You are absolutely correct. That is the actual answer.
Harn. What's Harn?
Yeah. It's a shame to
Anthe.
I actually think
it's a great system, but anyway.
I actually think Burning Wheel.
I
think Burning Wheel would be a really, really good system for kind of like everybody thing. The thing about Burning Wheel is an interesting system because it's got it's so front loaded. Like reading Burning Wheel, like the rule books, like, man, that shit is like fucking physics. Like it just, I don't know why I can't explain it, but the game is really easy. Like watching people play the game, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. That's easy. I get it. But like reading it and like trying to comprehend the rules is super hard. Because it's just because there's a lot, like you need to know a lot, but like once you have the game like running, it's kind of like it's like needing to understand how a car engine works before you can drive your car.
I guess it's like a game where you can't play the game until you learn. Oh yeah, whatever. But I got what you're saying.
Yes, yeah, you get what I'm saying. And so like that's one of the things I found that was very interesting about Burning Wheel. But Burning Wheel in terms of a system, man, it is fucking sick. Like it's also got a great the skill system is so cool because the game just levels you up as you use your skills. And like I think that design is brilliant because it's like you take like when you do like a sword slash, you do a mark whether you passed or failed because you gain experience because you're doing the thing. So you do a little like hash under
Steve,
doing the thing. So you do a little hash underneath your sword skill because you attempted to use your sword. And then as over time, like you just get better. I just the experience design is just really, really elegant. I think it's awesome.
Well, yeah,
it's one of the best systems.
You know what I was actually thinking would be like if you wanted to do a live play, like you, Steve, if you did a live play of this with a group on YouTube or Twitch, you would make $1 million right now. Is doing the old the newer Adventures in Middle Earth RPG for, you know, with Rings of Power coming out.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And that system was really great. I remember you really loved that system.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. It was really fantastic. Speaking of, because didn't they have like sitting around the fire system for that game?
Yeah, they did. The One Ring system.
The One Ring, that's what it was. Yeah.
The Adventures of Middle Earth was the fifth edition version of the One Ring. But yeah, so the One Ring is excellent. And yeah, it has, it's really, really set up to replicate the story structure of Tolkien. So a lot of the game is travel and then resting. And there's a huge portion of the game is like, you, what are you doing when you're not doing anything? Like that's like a very, very big portion of the game. And like, and so there's lots of like interesting opportunities to tell stories in that, you know, without those angles. Is very, very cool. And like just the way that the game is like set up to flow is really interesting. And the problem I found with that game was that I don't know enough Tolkien enthusiasts to play, because that was the same problem I had with the Star Trek D20 game. I think the Star Trek D20 is an excellent game.
Oh yeah,
it's very, very, or 2D20 I should say, not D20, 2D20, because
the Mophidius one, right?
Yeah, or... yeah, Mophidius. Yeah.
And like,
and fantastic yes. game system. The problem is, you need to know Star Trek to play that game. Like you absolutely need, like the less familiar you are with Star Trek, the less fun that game is going to be.
So any of the writers on Star Trek Discovery and Picard,
they would be terrible at it. So it's not a detriment. I would argue that's a feature, because like the game is very accurate to the source material, which is, you know, again, that's a feature, not a bug. The issue with that being though, you know, I just don't know that many people into Star Trek that much.
Well, now you will with Captain Daddy at the helm.
With Captain Daddy.
as I've said before, Steve, I don't consider myself anything other than heterosexual. And occasionally I find a man attractive, but no man have I ever found more attractive than Captain Christopher Pike.
Than Captain Daddy.
Captain Daddy. He really lights my warp coils. Yeah. And so I think anyone can take out of this in this situation, there are much better games than D&D 5th.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's what you want. Like D&D 5th is great if you want to play Dungeons and Dragons. But the thing is most people, in my opinion, are not playing Dungeons and Dragons when they're playing D&D. They're playing OC Simulator, and like they want to do their
OC.
Weird... The OC. OC is in Sonic Original Character Do Not Steal.
California.
And like, you know, they want to play like the green haired tiefling with the blue nipples and their best friend, the turtle mage, and the cat guy, and
furry simulator.
And then the dragonborn, and then there's also the undead warlock who is like literally a vampire, but he's a good guy, trust me. Thing they want to play like a really varied thing. So the other thing too is if that's your party, why aren't you in Planescape? Like that should be.
I know you went over this before.
Yeah, Planescape.
Just like I've talked about Furry Simulator 5000 before. Before we move on though from Dungeons and Dragons talk, I did want to mention that both Steve and I have seen the Dungeons and Dragons trailer for the new movie.
Oh yes,
it looks fantastic. You know what I liked about it, Steve? There was more than one dragon. So it is literally, at least half that title is true, is that there are dragons. So there has to be at least more than one dungeon for order for that to be 100% correct.
I do not share your enthusiasm. I think it looks like dross. I think it looks like a classic, whoa, that happened movie. I believe that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has done irreparable damage to the art of cinema, and it will never recover.
No, I blame China has done irreparable damage to cinema more than the Marvel Universe, because the Marvel Universe is just bowing down to their Chinese masters. And I'm not a xenophobe. I'm not racist against Chinese people. It's the fact that Hollywood just tailors everything towards the foreign market, meaning that there is no cultural significance in anything produced out of Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, whatever the reason is, the Marvel movie style, whatever, you know, it's the most, it makes the most bank. So it's essentially, you know, just that's why one of the reasons I've always been a horror.
I love it. It looks so good, Steve. There is a displacer beast. There is an owl bear. There is a gelatinous cube.
It had the fucking music in the trailer was atrocious.
Well, all that music is atrocious now because it's just done with temp soundtracks until the final end.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be a shit. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah. Well, they do. Yeah, they do temp soundtracks because they're editing the movie based upon like audience feedback until the very end. So composers can't really compose music anymore.
Well, they used what the fuck? They used some contemporary fucking song. It sucked. What was it? It's some like contemporary. I don't know. It just, it was so fucking out of place. And like, everyone's wearing armor and using swords, and it was like a very modern song.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the new thing. It's like, that is the newest trend.
I hate it.
I hate it too. Is that you take a modern song, but you take a semi-classic song of the last 30 to 40 years and you slow it down and do that. Like they did that in the Wakanda Forever soundtrack. They did No Woman, No Cry.
No. This trailer wasn't like, at least in that one, they did something to the song. No Woman, No Cry was at least modified a little. This was legit just the song.
Yeah. But that's the thing now is like they want contemporary songs, but not too contemporary. It has to be within the last 30 to 40 years. Like it has to be older than 20 years.
Generically contemporary.
Yeah, generically contemporary. You know, 20 years ago where it's no longer any sort of like people will be upset about it. Like,
yeah, I was just not. I don't know. I'm not thrilled. I am very thrilled about the Rings of Power, though. I think that looks great.
Yeah, that trailer looked fantastic. Yeah.
I think the Rings of Power looks very, very good. I'm excited about the Rings of Power. I'm very much looking forward to the Rings of Power.
I think most fantasy shows that are coming out, I'm been relatively excited about. House of the Dragon, the Sandman trailer looked really good.
The Willow trailer was good too.
The Willow trailer was a little generic, but I'm excited about it just because.
I mean, it's Willow. Willow is a generic fantasy movie.
Yeah, where Willow is the most generic fantasy movie ever generically fantasied.
Yes,
unless you read the book where you find out that Willow's normal size and everyone else is giants.
that's what Willow is. Willow is, you know, it's the Tolkien movie that's not a Tolkien movie, so it's got to be generic fantasy, and that's good. I like generic fantasy.
Yeah, it suffers from Ron Howard syndrome.
Yes,
where it's like, oh my god, get to the fucking point, Ronnie.
That's true.
You red-haired bastard.
You red-haired son of a bitch.
So I did want to talk about a couple other things before we go today. I did get a chance to see the Dungeons and Dragons creature kits that we talked about in an earlier podcast.
Oh yeah,
that's a heavy fucking kit.
Yeah, dude, it's sweet with the color forms.
With the color forms, yeah. They had one at the local gaming store. I picked it up and was looking around with it. It is fucking gigantic.
Yep. Yeah, and it comes with a carrying case. It's a very, very, very good, very nice product and a good price.
Mm-hmm. And Games Workshop. I know in the last cast we talked about how they're doing the newest edition of Warcry.
Yeah.
Something I did want to talk about was that they revamped the campaign system.
Yeah, they actually they're legit behind Warcry. I was kind of surprised. Like, maybe it's just because it's been too long, but like I remember specialist games usually being like they would like come out and be like semi shittily supported for like a very short period of time and then go away.
Yeah. No, you're right. And it's like it's very surprising because like Underworlds is still going and they have a new box.
Yeah,
they
announced a new box set for Underworlds.
Very and I'm cool. Like, I know Underworlds is still played, but it's kind of gone down. Like the reason I always thought that the reason why specials games would come out and then go away is because, you know, people have like a 3-year attention span with most games, right? Mm. Like you're not gonna be really into it like a specialist game for longer than 3 years and then you move on. But it's interesting to see the new Warcry, I think it's called Heart of Gur.
Yes.
Is very much like they changed the game itself. So they went to reactions, which is what something that they started, well, at least I think they started in Horus Heresy 2.0. So it's still I go, you go. But in my turn, at certain points in my turn, you can do a reaction. So you have to pay attention to what I'm doing in my turn.
Yes.
Long as the day of like, okay, I'm just going to move all my shit. And while you're moving all your shit, I'm going to go take a shit, you know, yes. sort of thing.
I'm going to go eat a sandwich.
I'm going to go eat a sandwich over here. I'm going to go buy some cookies. Do they have any of those Auntie Anne's cookies over there? I'm going to get some of those cookies. something like that. So now you actually have to pay attention because you get to react. And I think that I read somewhere that you get up to two reactions per turn in the new system.
Which is funny because it's literally just like going back to sixth edition fantasy where like you had to pay attention during your opponent's turn because you could react to every charge they make. You'd be like, I'm going to flee. I'm going to stand and shoot.
Yeah. But this is a little bit different because it's like, okay, you see a character, you see a unit or a figure moving during the movement phase, I'm going to do this during the movement phase.
Yes. Oh, it's every phase. That's pretty sweet.
Yes. So, well you only get, I think it's, maybe you get only one reaction per turn. That's not the way it normally is, but you'll probably have special characters that give you multiple reactions. So you can do up to two.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the way it is in Horus Heresy. You could do a maximum of three in Horus Heresy. So yes, you will probably get two, depending like one normal one and then one added from a character model. And if that character model dies, you no longer get that extra reaction.
Makes sense.
So it's like you could do it twice per turn. So you could do once in the movement phase or twice in the movement phase, whatever you want to do. Depends. I haven't really read the rules. I've just read about this from someone reporting that they've read the rules.
Yeah, very cool.
Yes. And the campaign system now, you can actually in between games, because before it was like you had a map, you played about 10 games and then you beat the campaign, right? And you upgraded your warband.
Yeah.
In the new one, there's like you play a game and then you encamp and then you can actually go out and search for treasure. So you know what that's like? It's fucking Mordheim. Right
yeah,
there.
Absolutely.
So the game is gradually moving towards Mordheim and then just. And I love the fact that they did these trees and stuff like that, but it's like, just give us a fucking Rune City, man. Just give us fucking Mordheim. That's what we want. Give us fucking Mordheim.
The people want the Ruined City.
The people want, and it wouldn't be hard either because like you could say like Mordheim, like this mysteriously ruined city appeared in, you know, the realm of death or wherever. And you could and the warbands are going out to look for warpstone or something like that. Like make it like real retro in that aspect, and people will absolutely eat that shit up.
Oh yeah, I mean they could also if they wanted to, they could even do a very cool they could actually, if they wanted to, set that up as like the entirety of the Sigmar content for a year, where they could do. We'll just say the realm of Shaiish, which is the realm of death. Yeah. Be like, yes, in the realm of Shaiish, blah, 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 this city has appeared. And then you make the general's handbook for the year be that area. So your Age of Sigmar games are going to be, you know, your Age of Sigmar battles are going to be in there. Your special rules
season
will be
of
there.
War, they call it. Their season
yeah,
of
the
war.
Season of war. Yeah, season of war, Shaiish or whatever. So you've got that going on. So you set up. Maybe do a couple Age of Sigmar terrain piece releases because they do new terrain for every season. So like do some terrain for that and be like, yep, this is, you know, because their gear was the last one, I think, or Gur, I don't know how you say it.
Gur. That's what I say.
Gur. Yeah. So you get your terrain set up for that, and then you do your underworlds. In the Cursed City or whatever, Forgotten City, and you have an Underworlds campaign in there, and then also you do a Warcry campaign in there. You literally just you converge all of your games on the setting.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That's the way it should be.
And you back it up, and it would just be super sick because then everyone's playing in the same, you know. on this, everyone's on the same page, which is cool.
Well, and like you've seen that super sick Witch Hunter warband that they did for Underworld, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's straight out of Compton. That's straight out of Mordheim.
Yeah. You do something like that in that box set with do the Carnival of Chaos. Because let's face it, that's the one warband that everybody really remembers from that fucking game.
Yeah, everyone loves the Carnival of Chaos. It's like that was the most popular warband.
It was adorable. It was a great look to it.
It was the most characterful warband by a mile.
Yeah. All you have to do, just release like, okay, a cobblestone mat, like that's out there, just like a city. You have a couple ruined like buildings in there, you know, movable terrain, make it, you know, that Tudor style with the whatever they're called, the pieces of wood that look, well, you know what I'm talking about, Renaissance fair buildings, a couple ruined ones of those, and that's your game right there.
Yeah, absolutely
fucking work, because all of the new campaign stuff sounds like old Mordheim. Granted, I haven't played Mordheim in 20 years, so it could be a while. The only other thing that I noticed with the box set is that they did not add any of the card sleeves for the cards, which is sad because that was like the best part of the original box set was that it came with little card sleeves and it made everything so well organized, as opposed to Curse City, which the cards are a nightmare all over the place.
Oh, are they all over the place?
Yeah, because there's no little cool sleeves.
I'm getting a copy of Curse City.
I would recommend it.
Yeah.
They say that they're supposed to be upcoming, like a few actual releases for Curse City now that it's released, but who knows?
You can actually get it.
Now that you can actually get it. I had my copy.
It looks good. I'm going to grab it. And then plus Radukar is apparently really good in Age of Sigmar. So
yes,
it's like a nice bonus. The other stuff is not good, but Radukar, the beast version of Radukar, is apparently quite good. I actually listened to the Curse City audiobook.
Oh, did you? I couldn't get into it.
Did you listen to the audiobook or did you try to
read it? I listened to the audiobook. I just, it wasn't.
It was pretty good. It was like, you know, pretty generic. Like I've been listening to a bunch of Black Library stuff. Actually, I'm listening to the audiobooks for the Realmgate Wars. Hammerhand, and then the quest for Galmaraz. But I'm also listening to in their audio drama section, they have a collection that I immediately had to buy. I was like, oh shit, that's a great deal. It's called Saga of the Mortal Realms, and it's almost every single audio drama they produced for Age of Sigmar in one collection for $30. It's like 17 hours.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I've really enjoyed, well, I've listened to all of the Siege of Terra books, and I've been going back and doing the old Horus Heresy books, but I really liked that they put the Felix and Gotrek books on there, all the original ones, unabridged, which are super nice. And they're also going back and redoing the End Times books.
Ooh.
So if you got a hankering for some old world, they have those books in there as well.
Nice.
Yeah. So they had like I think the first one was Curse of Nagash or something, Return of Nagash, whatever. That one was okay. And they have like Fall of Altdorf on there now, which I haven't gotten to yet.
Like Altdork. Oh. Yeah.
I have not gotten to listen to any of my audiobooks in a while because I've just been off work, so I haven't been driving.
I really want to listen to they have a bunch of Fire Slayer ones that I want to listen to. Audio stories look awesome.
Yes, the Felix and Gotrek, they actually did release the last two Felix and Gotrek.
Didn't Brian Blessed read that?
No, he read the first of the Age of Sigmar audiobooks.
Ah, okay.
Or maybe he just did the voice of Gotrek.
Yeah, because he's Gotrek, right?
Yeah, he's Gotrek. And the Age of Sigmar ones.
That's sweet.
Oh, yeah, totally. He does a great job. He has no idea what the fuck he's talking about. They do like an interview with him where he's talking about it. And I'm like, he has no idea about any of this. This is a guy who played Granddaddy Pig on Peppa Pig. So, he doesn't play Granddaddy Pig. He plays like Granddaddy Goat or something like that.
Brian Blessed rules.
I'm sure we'll hear from our British listeners about the Peppa Pig, But
you just put your lips together and blow.
Yes, the thankfully Mike children are out of the Peppa Pig era, so I do not have to watch Peppa Pig anymore.
The kids here do not do the Peppa. I don't know if they ever did the Peppa Pig, but they're not doing the Peppa Pig right now. They're doing it's not an anime, but it looks like an anime. I don't know, it looks like a cute show. I don't know what the hell it is.
I'm still a big fan of Bluey. So
my niece loves Bluey.
Yes.
It's really funny because she actually sounds like an Australian. My niece like literally has an Australian accent. It's really weird. Like
walk around
like,
calling you a cunt.
Not quite. Maybe later. But no, if she, like you can actually be like, Griffin, do you want strawberry? No.
Rotten.
Yeah, it was very, very weird. You know what? I gotta
put my thongs on, go to the beach.
I've been playing more Total War as well.
Oh yeah.
And I just beat the Grom the Paunch campaign.
Ooh.
Absolute blast. I cannot recommend that campaign more. It is so fun. Like it's really good. Grom the Paunch is hilarious. The whole concept of the campaign is great. You're collecting ingredients to create more meals for Grom, and you need to get at least 12 so you can get big and strong enough to reassault the elves in Ulthuan.
Oh, nice.
It's great. Grom's dialogue is really funny. Fantastic. I had a blast. I'm actually going for the full victory. I need to clear out the dark elves now.
Did I send you the full map? Someone did for the new game.
For Immortal Empires.
Yeah, someone really printed out the full map of what it looks like, and
yeah,
I'm like,
it's absolutely gigantic. It's all three games.
I'm like, this is too much.
Well, yeah, I mean that's why you. I mean that's the campaign Immortal Empires. Like you, yeah. Like because every so if anyone's unfamiliar with Total War, all the Total War games are broken into two campaigns. There is a campaign that the game is attached to, and then there is a kind of a free-for-all. So in the first one, it's the campaign is the old world, and what that is that's the area and timeline and factions of Archaon's invasions, Storm of Chaos, basically.
Storm of Chaos.
That's Total War One, as you play through the Storm of Chaos, essentially. However, there's also a mode where it's just a map of the old world, and all of the races have armies. Then in Total War Two, there's the Vortex campaign. And the Vortex campaign takes place in Lustria and Ulthuan and Nagarand and Khemri. So like it's the factions that are there. And their storyline is like there's this big vortex in the center of the map, and like people are fighting over it, and there's various factions have various goals in said area. But it doesn't feature all the races. Not every race is playable, not every race has lords in that part, but there is secondary campaign in Total War II called Mortal Empires. And what that is that's the entire map of Total War II plus the entire map of Total War I, and then all of the races from both Total War II and Total War I. And that's called Mortal Empires. So that's like, you know, it's got all of the stuff in it. Now, Total War III, they did the same thing, except it's called Immortal Empires. And it has literally everything. It's got every single, because now it's complete. So it has every faction from Warhammer, the game of fantasy battles. It has every faction, multiple lords for every faction. And then, of course, the actual geography of the entirety of the old world now, which is absolutely.
Well, and the old world and the new world.
That's true. Yes, because it's got Lustria. Yeah, it's just an absolute monster.
Well, and Nagarand, right?
Yes. Nagarand, Lustria, all those
Ulthuan.
Areas. Ulthuan, yeah. So like an absolute
fantasy Antarctica with the Chaos Penguins.
Yes, Norska. An absolute monster of a campaign map that is going to be huge. So that looks like that'll be a blast. Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah, it looks super great. I'm not going to have the time or will to play that. You just sent me that thing for, what is it, the game that you're playing.
Disco Elysium?
Disco Elysium. And I was like, And I looked, I don't think I sent it back to you, but I was like, I don't have time to play video games right now.
You should still buy it and save it for later because it's cheap.
I just don't have the time. I have no time. No, I'm I actually just finished up a massive commission for some 3D printing, and I finally got my 3D printers all up and running. So I have my two resin and my plastic printer. And so it feels weird to have them all running. It took me 8 hours to calibrate my plastic printer. 8 solid hours of working on that machine.
Jesus.
Yeah, I put it together, get it out of the box, got it working, and then it was like, it did not want to work, like, properly, the way it's supposed to. So I had to take the whole thing apart, tighten up all the screws. I cleaned every fan on that thing with alcohol, put it all back together. It was running like a dream, and then it was just like, but it still didn't want to print. So I had to sit there and rebalance it, and that balancing took about 3 hours to get done. It was obnoxious, but it's working perfectly now. I'm printing out some terrain as we speak.
Well, nice.
Yeah. So just some fantasy town terrain. I was like, I got the space for it. I want to make a little fantasy town.
Nice.
I'll have you print me War Master hordes at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah. Speaking of which, your privateer, not privateer, why can't I think of the fucking name of the game? Kings of War.
Oh yes.
A lot of their undead stuff for the Empires of Dusk got released.
Oh yeah, I saw that
previewed. Yeah, it looks
really sweet. Yeah, they look good. They look nice. I like their aesthetic is cool. I like that they have their own unique look to them, which is pretty cool. They're like a Byzantine
they look more like a Eastern, Middle Eastern.
Yeah, they don't look Egyptian. They look more like I said, like
late Roman,
Byzantine.
Yeah, I think late Roman.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool looking. Yeah, they're pretty sweet. I'm actually gonna I figured out my idea is I'm actually just going to do War Master lists and then just have them pull double duty for Kings of War and War Master.
Yeah, you might as well.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not like, yeah.
Ideally, like, I actually, because I was thinking about it, and I was like, you know what? Instead of just trying to force Kings of War at the smaller scale, like, if I'm going to do the smaller scale models anyway, like, I might as well just do War Master Revolution, because they really did an amazing job with War Master Revolution. One of the listeners actually turned me onto it. He mentioned it on Facebook. And War Master Revolution is, they took the war, so War Master Ancients is essentially War Master Second Edition. I don't know if you know this.
Yeah.
So it has updated combat rules and like changes stuff. So what War Master Revolution is it's taking the updated rules from War Master Ancients and converting them over to War Master proper. And they also rebalance the lists, some of the rules, the shooting, and they have full armies for everything in Revolution. It's all free.
Yeah. And they actually, you can buy it in hardcover.
Oh, they're selling a hardcover copy?
I don't know if they're still selling it, but I know they had a copy come out, or maybe not hardcover, but they had a copy of the book come out.
Sweet.
Yeah, you could buy it.
I'll take a look for that. It's very, very cool. And I said, so I was like, oh, I'll just do War Master, because I mean, War Master is obviously the king's game. So, you know, I might as well have, you know, my armies for it, because it's thing. I got this really sweet, giant neopropylene mat, you know, mouse pad mat.
Yeah.
Game mat that's got a grass field and then like a kind of like stone field on the other side. Ooh, it looks sick. I want to run some games on that.
It'll be sweet. I have my chaos army, so if you do want to play, I have it available.
Sweet. Yeah, definitely. We'll have to do that. Yeah, I'll be painting it up at, you know, obviously I got to get the armies first. Also, I got to talk to you later about the price wise too, because I saw there's some people who do it on Etsy as well. Yeah. So if your price is going to be comparable,
I charge far cheaper than those people.
Okay. Fair enough. Very good.
Those people. And they also, I can explain that all later. We got to get going though, because it's, we're running out of time on this. One last bit of news is Warlord Games has announced a new bolt action starter set. And the other reason why I bring this up is because this is how tone deaf historical players are in the UK.
Right.
Just historical players in general are. Like,
yeah, I'll say historical. It's probably just historical players.
It's a Western desert. So it's got the Brits and the Germans in it, of course. And they're calling it a gentleman's war. Which I understand the historical reference that they're talking about, but it's like, you gotta remember that there's a bunch of Nazis in this game. They're not gentlemen. I understand what you're talking about when you're doing this, but please, people, let's be a little more understanding that you can't use these old timey terms anymore.
Well, how delightfully British.
How delightfully British. I mean, I love war. I love Warlord. Don't get me wrong, but come on, guys. So anyway, go to our Game Classy Facebook page. It's the best way you can get in contact with us. You can like, comment, subscribe on the iTunes. Like, comment, and subscribe on the YouTubes. If you want to talk to Steve, you could find him at command_throw on Twitter.
Yes.
And I am on the Instagram at Game Classy Joe. If you want to download some of my models on Colts 3D and pay me money, I'm I think it's Game Classy Joe. I don't remember what my is. I keep on making money though, because hey. I have a couple things that I have for sale.
Nice.
But until next time, Steve.
Only the faithful.
Later.
Later.
Game Classy.